This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good, as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10. For you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh. I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Oh, probably my friend Jeremy.
Oh,
okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
So okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast.
Hey, bang. Oh. Hey, bang. Oh.
I thought the bitch was white. God damn it! I thought the bitch was white.
Oh my god! Oh, that's the Roseanne breakdown. I thought she was saying bench.
Wait, that was Roseanne?
That was Roseanne Barr.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
She was clarifying her tweet.
Oh, to clarify one thing. So at the beginning when it goes, hey, and then there's a beat, and then she says, what? What's that in between?
Bay.
Bay? Who's saying bay?
Mr. Tarver.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're to have some good Christian fun. More like good meme fun. Most of the time on
good
this
meme,
show.
Insanity.
I'm realizing how much of the stuff in the theme song has gone unexplained and was never a reference to something we talked about in the show before.
No.
But we're just like, oh, that's fun.
Just things that you and I talk about here and there.
Yeah, that's right. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian popular culture, like the movies, the music, the entertainment, the stand-ups, and also where our secular culture intersects with Christianity and faith issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ask people, like, so do you believe all this shit or what? Or do you not believe? Like, what is it? Which one is it?
Uh-huh.
That's usually what we do, I should say. For this episode, we're changing the format a little bit.
It's a special episode.
We're shaking it up.
Yeah.
Because I decided for once in my damn life, I didn't want to give people a homework assignment as collateral to being friends with me. Like, you have to watch or listen to this.
Do you think all our guests are your friends?
No. I know sad. That's not the case. Yeah. No, and it's transformed the way
a lot of them
you are
friendship
now. Where it's like, I will say, for you as a host, what was it like coming into this episode with nothing in particular to talk about, per se, for the topic?
Lovely. It's so great. It's such an ease off my mind. I can just talk to Zora and hear how he's doing. Sorry to interrupt him early, but... yeah, it's great.
Is it possible we screwed up with how we formatted this show?
No.
Okay. It's not possible.
No, because we talked about this, because this is like, you know, core to our show on some level. If we just got rid of all of the topics.
No,
then it's just
the
a couple
topics.
Of jerk-offs talking all the time about their faith. And, you know, there's plenty of those podcasts already, Kevin.
And let's name
name names. Okay, number one.
Well, really, I said there's no topic. Really, the guest is our topic today.
Yeah.
So let's introduce him right now. Ladies and gentlemen, you may know him from his podcast, Dope Town 3000 or 3K, and the upcoming Raven Simone television series reboot on Disney Channel, Raven's Home. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Zora Pekanjaka. Did we get it? It's hard to hear through the music, but okay.
That was very dramatic.
We want it to be dramatic. Church is
dramatic.
You
don't have to get your name screamed at you.
It is. It's very dramatic. I love it.
It's like every time we intro, that's our altar call to our guests to come join us at the altar.
Yes.
That's true.
Do you know how many altar calls I've walked down?
Participated.
Just out of pure, like,
a little bit of
pure
guilt,
pressure.
A little bit of worry.
Do you get a free one now because they punch your card 12 times?
Look, if anyone's getting into heaven, it's me. Just based on altar calls.
The number of altar calls.
Yeah. You're going, right? Here, go. Go walk down this thing.
The guy at heavens is looking down at this. He's like, oh, yeah, you're in. Dude, you're okay, guy. Like, it's all right.
Yeah, for sure.
Calm down.
I'm in.
Well, Zora, thanks so much for joining us on the show today, man. Really appreciate
you
being here.
Thank you.
What is your history with faith and Christianity?
With the Lord?
With the Lord. Yeah. You can start at childhood and start at the beginning if you'd like. Yeah.
I'll chart my path.
Great.
Of faith.
To the stars.
Yeah,
we
to
go.
The stars. So I grew up in a pretty secular, liberal household, but my grandparents were pretty big in like the Anglican church in Uganda, because both my parents are from Uganda. My grandparents grew up during colonialism, and the British came to Uganda and introduced the Christianity, the Church of England.
The only way to live.
Yeah, according to them. So
is the Anglican Church pretty big there? Like, if you're Christian in Uganda, you're probably part of the Anglican Church, or what?
That's a good question. I think historically, yes, and they called it was the Anglican Church or the Church of England, then it turned into the Church of Uganda.
Right, okay.
Or I think they called it the Anglican Church, and then it turned into the Church of Uganda. Mm. And so, historically, yes.
Okay.
So, that's probably the closest thing to the Episcopal faith here, because that's like sort of the basically
kind of
the
were
church.
Born out of each other, I think. Yeah,
exactly.
Can I ask just a quick tangent? How your parents, like, they were probably raised with the Anglican faith, right? So, how did they fall away or, like, change or whatever?
So, my grandpa on my dad's side was very like active, and he was a pretty integral part in like the setup of the Church of Uganda. He was just he was a big Christian man there. Uh-huh. And so he kind of ran his household as such. And I think, you know, it was something that was a huge part of my dad's childhood. And also my grandpa on my mom's side was like a pastor of a small church.
Okay.
So they were
they were both like deep into that.
Yeah, they were deep. They were both like kind of like teachers and then my grandpa became kind of like a government person. But so it was a big part of their childhood. And so I think as adults they rebelled from it. And you know, they were pretty rebellious, I think, in their adolescence. And then when my parents came to America, I think they just sort of decided not to foist it upon us. Although I think they were very cognizant in making sure that we were baptized, you know, just sort of as a family thing.
Yeah.
So we went to church kind of early on, and I was baptized in the Episcopal church, I think, when we lived in Northern California.
How young were you?
I was pretty young. I mean, I think I was maybe a baby. I don't remember the first time I was baptized, because it was like in Fresno. Then we moved to like the wine country.
So you grew up in Northern California? Then?
Yeah, I grew up in Healdsburg.
Okay.
Which is in Sonoma County. It's like an hour north of San Francisco. But beyond that, our household was very secular. I would say we didn't go to church that often. My parents separated when I was like 7. It was just one of those things where, I mean, I lived with my mom, and my mom, I think, had that sort of faith in her history, but also she was like, yeah, like she had like a Buddha in our living room. And So it just was like, it was secular, I would say.
Yeah.
But like, you know, believing in a higher power. And so I didn't necessarily grow up in that culture. I didn't get introduced to it until I was in high school. And my town was, it's very beautiful. I don't know if you've been to Healdsburg. It's very gorgeous.
Yeah, we're going right after this.
Yeah.
We're going to take a road trip.
Okay, yeah. I'll give you like a whole list of things to do.
Oh, you're coming.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You cleared your sketch for the rest of the day, right?
Yeah, you're best friends with all your guests. So,
that's right. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Six
finally,
to 7 hours.
Yeah. You said it. F you, Caroline.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah,
F you. I'm friends with everybody.
Whoa. They're all my best friends.
Right. We can go to Healdsburg and eat sticky buns, but it's a very beautiful place, but also you know, just to be real, it's a very bigoted place. You know, it's not, they don't have a history of a lot of Black people up there, and there's a reason. And so my mom was like, oh, you know, we live in this beautiful town, you know, like but I think they didn't really sort of understand the history of that place. And so it was bigoted.
What was the history of that place, if I could ask?
It's a small town north of San Francisco. It's like an older town.
Okay.
And I think like historically there were a lot of like sort of like railroad magnates that ended up like settling up there from San Francisco. And so it just was this. Also, there's a legend that the Ku Klux Klan chapter was there for like Northern California.
Oh, jeez.
And so, yeah, it just, there was like this house that was like, oh, that's the KKK house. That's the Ku Klux Klan house.
Oh my gosh.
And so, and I don't know, that might be like an apocryphal story, but I believe it because just how the town was and how I was treated as I got older.
Yeah.
And so I ended up in high school. I didn't like a lot of people because they weren't very good to me, but I ended up kind of making friends with a group of people and also meeting one of my friend's dad who became a mentor to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a pretty, I would say, crass guy. And a lot of people were like scared of him, you know, in town because he just like always had his shirt off and he was always cursing and you know.
That was his thing.
Yeah, he was kind of insane. But he was also like, he met me at a basketball game because I played high school basketball and he was like, I love your game, kid. Like, and he just like took me in.
Is this the kind of town too where like most people kind of know everyone around? Like,
yeah, everyone,
there aren't a ton of strangers or anything. Yeah,
yeah, everyone knows everyone. Okay. And so he, his name was Mr. Tucker, and everyone knew Mr. Tucker is like this guy who would just sit out on his porch. He had like this.
Was that wrong? Because he didn't have a shirt to tuck in. Carry on.
Wait, what?
Never mind.
Not exactly a shirt tucker, I think is what Caroline is saying.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's okay. Gotcha. That's,
thank you. Now yeah. It's funny.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's
let
good.
Let me diagram the joke.
Yeah. That's good. So he did not have a shirt to tuck in at all. If he had a shirt, anyway.
Were people afraid of him or was
they were afraid of him because he just was like, he would sit out on his porch and like water his lawn. It was he lived in this old like brick house.
Okay,
with like it was like this beautiful house that no longer exists anymore. I think they like tore it down because it's like so old. He would just, you know, he would like yell at people if, because he talked like really loud. And so sometimes we would like hang out on his porch and like have these conversations. And, you know, there was one time a neighbor was like, can you guys like keep it down? And he cursed this guy out to the point where he was like, if you don't get back in your house, you're going to go back in a pine box.
Oh my God.
In pine like, pajamas, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So he was kind of terrifying, but he loved me. And he was just like, I'm going to take you in. Like, these people are all racist. And like,
and isn't that validating when someone that a lot of people are afraid of favor you? It's like, hey,
yeah.
I made it.
Did he feel like a protector a little bit?
I mean, a little bit. Look, he was like a white man in this town that was a father of one of my friends who was nice to me, you know? Yeah. And so that just was like kind of a rare thing because I was pretty ostracized in this town, especially as I got older. So even though he was like a crass person, he went to school to be like a preacher back in the day.
Oh, wow.
He went to the school called Cal Baptist in Riverside. And so when I met him, he kind of took me in and he would like, you know, he taught me like how to box and everything. He's like, you got to protect yourself from these redneck kids that would like threaten me all the time and like bully me and everything. So he kind of became this like a protector and like mentor and someone that like kind of taught me how to like stand up for myself. Mm. And he was like, you got to go to Christian college, man. Like, I had the time of my life at Christian College. It's the best. If you go to Christian College, you won't have the type of experience you're having in high school. People will be nice to you. Like, Christians aren't racist, was what he told me.
Always true.
we'll get to that part.
What did your mom think of Mr. Tucker? Like in this period, was she like, I guess that's fine.
In this period,
like your friend's dad, but yeah.
Yeah. In this period, my mom, I think approved just because he was nice to me and he like sort of took me in and was, you know, this person that I think just helpful to me. And so, yeah, at this time, you know, later on, I think it didn't become the most healthy dynamic because he was a little crazy.
So what happened after? So he would tell you like, let's go to.
Yeah. So he was like, yeah, let's go to college. Yeah. And so we ended up taking. So my junior year, we took this road trip down to Southern California and we went to a bunch of like the small, like liberal arts, like kind of Christian colleges down there. The first one we went to was Westmont.
I was going to ask if you like checked out Westmont.
Yeah. We drove down the 101. Uh-huh. And it was like this gorgeous drive. I don't know if you've taken that drive from San Francisco it's so beautiful. Go through like Pismo Beach and San Luis Obispo. Yeah.
And so Westmont's in like Santa Barbara, which is a beautiful like beach town.
Yeah.
Oprah has a house there.
Oh yeah. Montecito specifically.
It's really pretty.
It's very pretty.
Right on the ocean. And I had like stayed at Westmont one time for like some conference or something, or it might have been like a choir thing. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But I have friends who've gone there. So I'm pretty familiar with Westmont.
Yeah.
It's a nice little liberal arts school.
For sure. Yeah. It's before the fires. I don't know what it looks like after those fires that happened a few years ago. But at the time it's famously beautiful, like that campus. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first college that we went to during that trip. And I was just like, oh my God, like this place looks like heaven. It's near the beach. They're like rolling green hills and you know, these like marble statues and these like this beautiful Spanish architecture.
Yeah, there's like a train that goes through town that everybody rides on.
Yeah, it was heaven to me. And, you know, it was just gorgeous. And so I was like, oh yeah, I want to go to a school like this. We ended up visiting Biola. We went through Cal Baptist because that's where he went. So he wanted to show us that.
Did you look at APU? Azusa?
Yeah, we looked at Azusa Pacific. I'll get to that.
Okay.
Because I went to a lot of colleges.
Oh, okay, great.
So we took that trip and I was like, yeah, like I want to go to Westmont or any of these schools. So I had really good grades. And looking back on it, I was like, I probably could have gotten into, you know, like a Brown
like
or, you know, or like a Stanford or whatever at the time.
They would have been racist. The Christian colleges wouldn't have been racist.
They're all nice.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They wouldn't, for sure. Like, they would have been way more racist at Brown.
Were you like pretty involved in church as this was going on too? Or was
no.
he just kind of like mainly this friend you had? And
we never went to church at all. Oh, okay. This guy was like, was not the church type. I mean, he had
filthy
mouth.
Church.
Yeah, he was like, he was terrifying. Like looking back on
like
it.
Like an unpredictable person in church is kind of a wild card.
Yeah, he was definitely a wild card. So,
and it's interesting because I feel like I've heard a lot of pastors say, doesn't matter why they come in the door, as long as they come in, like to church. And oftentimes I think for like, especially when you're younger, I know for like guys, sometimes it's like, oh, there's so many girls at church. You can meet a girl at youth group, blah, 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 blah. I even knew a friend of mine out here who was like, I'm going to keep going to that church because there's a lot of pretty girls there. But, yeah. But it's
they all
funny.
Sound like, those are a lot of pretty girls.
Hi. Oh, but what?
Yeah, they sound like goofy.
Of course, there's some pretty girls. But But it's funny that the kind of rickety bridge that he was building for you to get to like church or at least church culture was like, they'll be nicer to you. You know what I mean? That's not a means to like, well, this is the one true God and you got to worship him. But it's like a more practical means of like, people will be, there's at least, he was giving you the expectation of like, people are going to be kinder
like a stronger
to you.
Community.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. He hooked me in not with like, oh, there are going to be girls there. He said that too, but also like, he hooked me in with like, they're not going to be racist to you like they are in this town.
Which must have been nice too, to just hear someone like, thank you. Like you're recognizing that this is happening.
For sure.
Like, real. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I ended up applying to a bunch of them and I got into a bunch of them obviously cause I had good grades.
Nice.
And, I ended up choosing Azusa Pacific first
because
by the time I got to like my senior year, I was like, this is ridiculous. Westmont is beautiful, but I grew up in Healdsburg. I want to go to like the most diverse one out of all of them comparatively.
Well,
so
I
looked at the stat.
APU, that's pretty diverse. Although there's a problem with him now.
There's a huge problem.
And APU, for those who don't know, is actually like really close to where we record here. It's like a couple towns down from Pasadena.
It's like 10 exits away.
Yeah, so actually a lot of like Azusa kids are always like in Pasadena studying, like taking up valuable space at my coffee shop.
Sure,
don't
sure.
Appreciate.
Yeah, just preaching so to people, just trying to... trying to convert people.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is, I feel like it's sort of, at least if you're on the spectrum of like conservative to liberal, it's like a little bit liberal, not extremely, or maybe at the time you went there.
They just recently allowed some gay relationships to exist.
That public statement is such a weird gymnastics because it was like, I don't know if you read it, but it was like, while we don't believe it's biblical, we also think it's fine if you have a homosexual relationship and that's not against the rules anymore. You're welcome.
It's insane.
It's crazy.
You know,
because there's a gay club on that campus that they meet together. Like they're there already. So
yeah, they were there. They were there when any of the places where I was, there were always LGBT people in Uganda. If you go there, it's technically like against the law. It doesn't mean that there aren't LGBT people.
Course,
it's insane. And so
it's just so funny when they're like, oh, we'll recognize that this can exist now. And it's it's been going on. Like, what
thank
do you mean? Thank you.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. So comparatively, like where the household that I grew up in and the town that I grew up in and kind of going to Azusa Pacific first, I got there and I was like, you know, I kind of maybe had like rose colored glasses and I was looking at things, I would say, like, with naivete. And so I just quickly learned, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I got there and I felt like I didn't feel sort of accepted by a lot of people because I think I didn't kind of have that Christian language, that, like, Christianese. I didn't speak that. At the time, I mean, this is like the early mid 2000s. And so that whole like Christian music culture and, you know, the fact that like Bush was president at the time, like, you know, that was like, to me, like that was like a pretty high time in that kind of evangelical, like white Christianity.
Yeah.
And it was just a culture I just didn't know. I was not fluent. And so I got there and I was like, hey, I'm Zora Bikangaga. Like I got there and just, it wasn't, I didn't fit in. I didn't like where it was. I mean, it was in Azusa, and I was like, I grew up in here. This place is ugly.
it's fair.
Yeah.
There's mountains,
it's
but...
It's pretty deserty.
Sure.
Because
again, I grew up in Northern California. Like that was like just my frame of reference.
Yeah, just
I
get like beautiful to, green hills everywhere.
Yeah. And I get to Azusa, and it's just...
The opposite.
Trash.
Yeah.
No offense to APU, but it's... Come on.
You know it's trash.
Goodbye, APU listeners. Yeah.
And then there was this, this campus pastor that was like, oh, this is like the guy who was like the pastor of like the undergrad. And he would like lead chapel and he was like sort of younger. And he just like said some like really problematic stuff to me where I was like, this guy's like, just like the people in Healdsburg. Like, I remember like I was like also going through this eccentric phase where I was wearing just these like kind of wild outfits. And so I found like these pair of like overalls and I was like, I want to wear overalls.
I love that.
Yeah, and so they're like comfortable and like look, I was rocking them.
It's a one-stop shop for an outfit.
Yeah,
you're done.
I thought I was pulling them off. but he said something like weird where he was like, "Oh yeah, like oh it's Jim from Huck Finn." And I was like, "What?" No. And I was like, "Wait, what? Did he just say that?" Like he is.
I would have said Super Mario instead.
Sure, yeah, which is another offensive character because, like, he's an Italian caricature. But I said Mario Brothers is offensive. That's my take.
And anyone who plays Super Mario right now, you're part of the problem.
Yeah, you're probably
complicit.
Sure. You are part of the problem.
Of plumber stereotypes.
Yeah, that's not a cool thing to say.
Yeah, it was not. But it was like one of those things where I was like, wait, what?
What was the context? Like, what was your, at this time, like, what was going on with your faith that you would be having a conversation with a campus pastor?
I think it was something where I walked by him and so he said that. So it wasn't like a sit down of like, hey, tell me about your faith. Like, do you believe in Jesus? Okay, cool. You look like the slave character from Huck Finn. It wasn't like that. Like, but it was,
okay, God bless you and bye.
It was, yeah, like, God bless you. God bless
you. It was like a cat call or it's like a drive by heckle.
It was just
people just like comment on your outfit, you know, if you're around.
Oh,
yeah, it was just a dick. It was like a dick thing that he was trying to be funny about. I mean, at the time, this like first semester in college, I started taking religious classes and you know, kind of like Christian, like Bible faith classes that sort of, you know, were about the New Testament. And I got really into the story. And so I think in that first semester, because I'm very much an information kind of person and I love to read. And so I read through the whole Bible, you know, in the first, like, I don't know, the month of school. And I got like really into the story.
The whole Bible?
Yeah, I mean, whoa. I read it like pretty quick. That's at least what I remember. I read it pretty quick, and I got like into just the story of the Gospels, and I related a lot to it in sort of the outcast in finding like a mentor figure and just being kind of outcast. Like, I just really related to the whole 12 disciple Jesus aspect of it, because I was like, oh yeah, like I kind of know how it feels to be in a community of people that like don't like you, and you're sort of this like small clique of people that are like, yeah, I'm following the Son of God. Like, I'm not to call like my mentor that, but I related to the story.
Yeah.
And so I did get into reading the Bible, and I think like that's when I definitely started to try to go to church. That first semester I went to, I like sampled a bunch of different churches, and I ended up going to this Pentecostal church that scared the Jesus out of me, where it was, people were speaking in tongues.
Scared Jesus straight.
Yeah. I had never heard people speak tongues before. And I was like, what is happening? Are they possessed? I remember there was this person that ran down the aisle with like a banner.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is happening?
The motions were just made. I was like, did he have a sword?
Yeah. He was wielding it like a sword. I know you can't see my hands, but the gentleman was he was brandishing a banner like with just a Christian cross.
The Pentecostal church can be intense, even going in like as a Christian who was raised in it. So to go in sort of like with not a ton of context, even, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm a music fan. Okay, have you been to an actual punk show? Have you been to a scream metal show
where
there's a mosh pit and there's an expectation you will get bruises? Well, I haven't been to that. Like, that's what being a Christian is like sometimes.
Yeah, it was. It was just, it was a lot to like throw into it. And again, like my experience was going to an Episcopal church, which an Episcopal church is very, just
like formal.
Yeah, formal and liturgical, and just sort of like, we're here and there's incense and there's going to be exactly. That's the energy.
Episcopalians, the NPR, Pentecostals, the Zoo Crew.
Yeah, they're like, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they were just, it was NPR. Insane. I would love to go back just as like a character study, as a comedic writer. Just because it was crazy, but I was just sort of put off by the whole experience, and I talked to my mentor, and I was like, "This is insane! Like, I don't feel comfortable here and I don't like this place. And he was like, well, just go to another school that you ended up getting into. So I ended up going to Biola that next semester.
Oh my god!
Because it was close. It was close.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, so
you
I was
had
like,
one semester at APU and then
one semester at APU.
Biola. Okay.
Yeah. Transferred to Biola.
Biola, man. I had
home of the Cold War kids.
Yeah. I went to a Christian school in Murrieta, which is kind of nearby. And so like
Wait, which one?
Calvary Murrieta.
Oh, okay.
And which is, there's a Bible college, like Calvary Chapel Bible College is in that area.
I think I've heard
you
of
probably,
that.
You probably maybe heard that. But it was kind of like a pipeline. Like you either went to Biola or Cal Baptist for the most part. So
okay.
Like I heard a lot about what those places like when visited and kind of thought like, maybe I'm supposed to go here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christian thing to do or whatever.
Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I went there, hated it cause it was like even more conservative. And, I ended up, there was like this girl that I got involved with that was, it just ended badly. She kind of grew up very sheltered. And so I think there was some point where I was on the phone with her and I like, I was talking to my mentor and my mentor was like, oh, like, let me talk to her. And he like
conference call,
he said a curse word. It wasn't a conference call. I wish it was a conference call, but she ended up like freaking out because he said,
cause he cussed.
Shit. Yeah. Cause he like, she felt like, she that he cursed at her because he said something like bullshit or something like that, and he was like, he had his mentor call me to curse me out, and she just sort of turned me into like this villain. And so like her friends were just like, this guy is a it just was not a good situation. I was like, what? What's happening? I don't understand what's happening. And so but I hated it anyways. I hated Biola. But I got involved with this, this gospel choir there, which was really dope. And I was like, oh, I like gospel music. It's fun. And it was like the only diverse space there. Cause I think they got this woman named Cookie who was like this choir director who came from like this black church near. Uh-huh. And so it was like this one kind of sanctuary of like diversity where like all the people of color on the campus, which was like maybe 15 would congregate and sing, gospel music. It was great. And then I think that next year, one of my good friends from Healdsburg was getting into college. So he was a year younger than me. And he went to Cal Baptist. And he's like, hey, man, you got accepted to Cal Baptist. Just transfer with me.
He went to so many colleges.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. It's insane.
Did everything, like, did the credits transfer?
It all transferred. All
right.
It all transferred. It was like easy. It was like very transferable.
So funny.
It's, yeah. And once you transfer once, it's easy. It's like, oh, I'll just
you get
go to...
addicted to
I was addicted. Yeah. And so I ended up going there. And it was... Cal Baptist was a trip because it was like so easy. You know, I think I got like straight A's and everything. And I barely... it was like so not challenging.
Were the religious requirements pretty much the same at all of them? Like I know you have to go to chapel once a week at APU.
Yeah, I think APU was...
take Bible classes.
Yeah.
Stuff, right? Yeah, okay.
I think the chapel requirements were the most strict.
Three times a week or something?
I think it was two. Oh, yeah. At Cal Baptist and APU. I think the same thing with Biola. But yeah, so... going to chapel, whatever. I was just like, this is weird. But I was at least going to college with my best friend, one of my best friends. I was in Riverside, like sort of not challenged at all. And, you know, I was with a guy who I had kind of gone to high school with. And I just felt like I was like, this is not fun.
It's the same.
Kind of the same.
Back home, yeah.
Was he more like hardcore Christian than you
no,
were?
No, no. He was, no. I think he was like me where he just, I think he ended up getting involved with like the like diving team. Mm-hmm. But anyways, it was.
Stephen Curse Chapman swimmers, we call them. Stupid joke. Anyway,
Is that a Christian deep cut?
He famously dives in his songs. He has a song called
It's our theme song, actually, but you can't hear it anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I should send it to my friend Travis.
Like,
remember when you dove?
They play that at every swim meet.
It's kind of like you.
Yeah.
Were you studying? Did you have a major when you were going through these like first couple years?
Yeah, I had a major which was history. I thought I was going to be a history teacher.
Oh, cool.
And so again, like looking back, I should have been at a more challenging college. Like I should have been at a school that was going to challenge me academically because I was taking these history classes and transferring all over the place and like still getting good grades. And it just wasn't what was promised to me. Like I was in these spaces and I just didn't feel like I was going to church and sort of like, yeah, like I read the Bible, I'm a Christian, but I never like felt a part of that community. Mm-hmm. And it just, there was like this disconnect. And so I was accepted to Westmont and I was like, why am I in Riverside right now? Do you remember how beautiful Westmont was when we drove through there when you were a junior in high school? Like, what are you doing here? Oprah lives there. At the time, so did Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt.
What else do you need to hear?
Why would I need to be in Riverside?
State Street.
Holy Trinity of Westmont.
Isla Vista.
So I ended up going that next year to Westmont College. This was a monumental moment, I would say, like probably not only in my journey as like a human being or like in faith or in life or just in what I ended up doing mm-hmm. now, because I pulled a prank there when I got there. That was a pretty epic prank. That became kind of a famous prank.
Oh, wait, what year were you there?
I was there in 2004.
Oh, okay.
I got there. So there was a joke that we used to do when I was in college or when I was in high school with my best friends, where I would imitate my parents, but specifically my dad, when we would go to like restaurants and everything, and I would do his accent, and we would like sort of prank people to have them think that I was from Uganda. It was just a funny thing, and I would always do my dad's accent. And so they were like, hey, it'd be funny like if you did that with your roommate. Because like, you know, you get your roommate's information.
Oh, yes.
And so they were like, oh, they probably think that you're from like Africa because of your name. And so he called me over the summer. I was with my friends. And I did an accent with him. And he totally bought it. And I was like, guys, he bought it. By the way, I've told this story on This American Life. I will give you the abridged version because
I feel like I have heard this story. Like, yeah, this is a famous prank.
Okay. Yeah, it's a pretty famous prank at this point. It's documented, and archived. But
I want to hear it. I don't think you should do abridged. I think you should do semi-abridged.
Yeah, I'll give you the semi-abridged version. So I talk to my roommate. Reed, he sort of bought this accent, and we're like, oh my gosh, like you should do it for like a few minutes, like when you get there it'd be like epic or whatever. And so I got there and I kind of dressed in like international student clothes type of stuff, like
that,
you know,
you had to go out
overalls
and buy?
No, it's yeah, overalls. I brought back the overalls.
Overalls, no shirt.
Exactly. No, that's more
Mr. Yeah, Tucker stuff.
Exactly. Because I have a lot of relatives and cousins that, you know, were international students. I kind of, there's a look, there's an aesthetic. And so like I had this shirt that was like, that said like Universal Studios. And I wore these kind of like, you know, like off brand sandals. And there's an aesthetic to someone that just came to this country, particularly from Uganda. And so
I like the sublety of this look too.
It's like,
you didn't go full coming
it's not
to America
a tunic. It's, no,
it was you have to be specific. And so I had like these cargo shorts that were just a little too short at the time, and I showed up and I did this accent, and I came into the our dorm room, and my roommate was there before me, but his dad and his sister were there, and I didn't expect to like see them first.
Uh-huh.
And so I like did the accent with them, and they were like so nice, and like my roommate's dad was so nice, and his little sister, who was like 12 at the time, 11 or 12, she was like so just sort of like, oh my gosh, like you're from like Africa, that's so amazing, like have you seen giraffes and all that, and she was just like so adorable. And I just kept doing the accent because I was like, I was very endeared by that experience, and before I knew it, I had like met them, and I met my roommate, and then quickly I met my neighbors, and you know, like in college where you just meet people quickly.
Everyone's so eager to like make friends right away.
Yeah.
But your whole floor.
For sure. For sure. By the end of the day, I was known as this guy from Uganda. And I was like, wait, what just happened? Everyone knows me as this guy. And it became this kind of thing of like, how long could you do it?
Oh my gosh. And did you have any friends at Westmont at the time that knew about this?
No.
You were a total
Everyone
fresh
met
face.
Me as this person. And this is like maybe a year before Facebook.
The perfect
hit.
Crime. Yeah. Because if it was 2004, it was probably before it rolled out to
you could have
all
them.
The other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
So I met all these people as this person. Like there was like this girl I got close to that, you know, it just got complicated because she knew me as this guy, and I just was sort of like, I felt bad about it, but also like,
Zora.
we know each other like as human beings, you know.
Oh,
and she
did you have a backstory you were telling people too, like where you were from in Uganda?
Well, I knew a lot about Uganda because my family's from there, and so everything that I said about Uganda was true. But
wow.
But it wasn't me, and it was a character.
It's just and full so, on role all the time that you
it
were
was,
playing.
It was a role, and so the first like day or couple of days, it was like mentally exhausting, and it was this thing of like at first it was this challenge of because I told my friends. Like at the end of the day, like, hey, everyone knows me as this guy. And they're like, dude, you can't do it for a week. I bet you. And it was like this, you know, sort of like this gentleman's wager. And I was like,
as all gentlemen do, create identity fraud.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wasn't stealing anyone's credit card information.
Right.
That's
this
true.
Is like,
that's true. I guess.
And this is the more ambiguity of the whole situation. But it was this thing where like I was treated so well as this guy. And so again, like I'd grown up in this town where I was ostracized and like not accepted. I went to these colleges where I thought I was gonna be connected and feel accepted. I wasn't. As soon as I get to the school and play this character, all of a sudden everyone like accepts me. And
what do you think that was?
It's people see you differently if you have an accent. I think in this country there's a difference between me coming in and being like a black man that lives in America that's American as opposed to having an accent. Like yeah. There's something less threatening about that I definitely learned, you know, as soon as I had this accent and sort of dressed in this way, like I was just not threatening to people. And they're like, and there's also like a patronizing aspect to it. I mean, people were just kind of like, oh, we need to, especially around Christians, like, oh, we want to like adopt you. I learned that a lot of that acceptance was this, you know, sort of, you know, it was
like, oh, I need to take care of you and show sure. you the ropes and make sure.
Exactly.
You
exactly. Stuff, yeah. There were people that were like really genuine about it. But it was this weird thing that I discovered. And I think it was this thing that I got wrapped into because of that.
Yeah.
And so it was hard to come out of because I'd solidified these relationships as this person. And this girl that I got close to, I mean, it wasn't like a physical relationship or anything like that. Because again, like I felt conflicted all the time. But it was definitely like an emotional, like sort of college thing where you're spending, you know, hours talking to this person
and time
just that. Yeah. It was totally that.
Did you feel like the guy that you played was like different than your personality too, or was it still like your personality with this accent in this story as well?
It was this weird way that I was able to, because I'm naturally very extroverted, uh-huh. and it was a way for me to express a side of me that I had to hide because people
had these assumptions of what it meant if you were
extroverted. It was easier to be vulnerable in a way.
Yeah, it was easy to be like open and extroverted, and I had to learn to be sort of closed off because I was like mistreated in high school, and I think like I couldn't necessarily be my full self. And so weirdly, as this guy, I was able to like be myself in a way. Yeah. It just was like this crazy thing that I discovered as I did it. I realized at some point that I could have done it forever. Everyone knew me as this person, but after a while it felt lonely because like I was like, you guys don't know me. No one knows me here. And so I ended up having to out myself.
After how long?
Well, it was like most of the semester.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was most of the, it was a semester. It was like most of it. And so I was like, okay, well, I need to tell people. Who am I going to tell first? I told my roommate and are my neighbors. They all reacted in their own way. My roommate kind of freaked out. he came into my room and I was like, oh, I got to do this in a funny way. And he came in and I was like, hey, man, like, what's happening? You know, like, I kind of give him one of the. And then I was like, oh, like, how was my American accent? Was it.
Oh, my God.
And he was like, oh, my God, like, that was weird, dude. Like, that was, like, too good. And so I said, well, you know, what if I told you that this is how I speak? I'm not from Uganda. I'm from Healdsburg. And he just gave me this look like the whole world had flipped and he didn't know what to believe. And he left for like an hour. And
he just left?
Yeah. He like, and he came back and he's like, I went for a walk. And like, I just had to think about this. And like, it makes sense. You would always leave to be on the phone. And it was just like weird. There's something weird about it. And like, your yearbook is like right there. How do I not know? And like, it just all like connected to him.
Oh my gosh.
And he was like, hilarious. Okay. First of all. first of all, fuck you. Second of all, hilarious. Third of all, you got to tell our neighbors because, you know, like in the dorms, like you're sort of close with the people.
Wow. So ultimately, he was like pretty balanced about it.
Yeah, he was furious at first, but he had to like process it. And so one by one, people came in and I did the same thing to people that came into the room, like our neighbors. And some people just like laughed hysterically. Some people were like, oh, what? Like,
yeah. Just you destroyed out. People's realities one by one.
Yeah, because it's that uncomfortable thing of like, what have I been doing this whole time too?
Sure.
Like, these assumptions I made about this guy and what I thought he
exactly.
was. Like, what's this about me and like the uncomfortable racist things about me that I'm discovering too?
You nailed it on the head.
Yeah.
Because that's what people were doing. I mean, there were some people that felt like I played this prank on them and they felt defensive because of that. They're like, what did I say?
Yeah,
you know,
and like,
that kind of thing.
If this was an experiment too, like I probably am the villain in this, and
for sure.
I don't like you for doing that to me.
And it was so just telling about people, and some people reacted that way. Some people were like, "You're a comedic genius. What you did was so like there were people like that." And I was like, "Yeah, sure, like that's what I did."
It's true.
Yeah. And then there were just people that so everyone reacted in like an extreme way in their own way.
How did your like professors react?
Some of them were like really mad. I had this like badminton teacher that was just like hated me afterwards.
What?
I know badminton, right? So Westmont, so Montecito.
That's so funny.
But he was just
dad took badminton in college too.
Yeah, it was like
really
it's like
it's
the
a fun
best
sport. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was like one of my favorite classes. But my badminton teacher hated me after that. He's like, pick up all the birdies.
he took it out on you in the most badminton way he could.
Sure. And then one
light load.
Right. He was kind of a prick anyways. I didn't like him. But there was a professor that I had who was like my history professor, and he like felt bad pranking him because like it seemed like he was hurt by it. He was like, he felt like, why would you do that kind of thing? And because he would call on me a lot and he was like really interested in my story, and I was, you know, I was like good at history, so anyway, so told the girl, obviously she like was mad at me for like a calendar year, and
can't imagine why.
I know. Look, we reconciled. If you want to hear the whole story, it's on This American Life, and they interviewed her, like they got her perspective.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay,
we're
cool.
Friends, like we had coffee like
a
couple years ago. She's married now. So it's all good. Like it's all good. But I always tease her about that.
That's amazing.
So that's what happened at Westmont. And
that is so interesting and fascinating and like, yeah.
Yeah. And so with that, I just was like, oh, this is really cool. I learned this thing. Like Christians are this, it's just this weird thing. And I like performing. And so I ended up, and again, this was not expected, but the next year, my other best friend was going to Seattle Pacific. He was like, dude, transfer one more time. And I'm like, no, I can't transfer one more time. He's like, dude, just apply. It was like the only one I didn't apply to. He's like, just apply. And like, if you get in and we get placed together, like just come on, do it. So I was like, fine. Applied. Of course I got in. They placed us in the same like campus apartment. And we took a road trip up there to Seattle.
Is college number 4 or 5?
This is 5.
It's 5.
Yeah.
I'm so curious of what the admissions office, like when they looked at exactly your timeline, I'm like, what?
You know what it was? It was, I don't think, because I got, if I had kind of like marginal grades, maybe they would have been.
But your grades were just so good. They're like, this is just undeniable. A smart kid. That they were just could go anywhere.
Yeah, like I had good grades, and I don't know, like
probably they a great were, writer, convincing.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I wrote like, look, my essays were.
I can
decent.
Imagine. I can only imagine.
Decent. Even though I was a con artist, it was so I, but
that'd be a good essay though.
Yeah, exactly.
How I conned a bunch of dummies.
Why being a con artist is, really the best education that you can get.
Honestly, maybe.
We took a road trip to Seattle, hadn't never been to Seattle. It was in the summer. Seattle is like the most perfect city in July. If you ever go there, it'll fool you.
Oh, right. It's yeah.
On a sunny day, Seattle is the most beautiful city in America.
It is so... I think I went there in like May, and it was just so beautiful all the time. I was like, what are we doing?
I know, I know.
Here.
Yeah.
It was great.
So I was like, I'm going to Seattle. So I ended up finishing school there. To me, when I think of my college experience, I think of Westmont, that like prank, and I think of Seattle Pacific, just because it was... the most diverse. It was in a city. It's probably maybe where I should have went like in the first place. I became friends with a group of international students who, you know, they were involved in church and there was like a gospel choir there, but like there were two students that actually they weren't students, they were involved in the school, but they were from Uganda actually. And I, there was a moment where I was thinking of like doing the prank again for like a hot second. It was like one of those things where you know, like Catch Me If You Can, if like there's that moment, I think towards the end where, you know, Frank Abagnale or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where it's like, is he going to do it again?
Yeah.
Is he going to run away?
If you could trick them.
So at Westmont, there were two Kenyans. That I met where I thought it was going to be the end of it.
Oh.
And I fooled them. And so once they bought the accent, I was like, I can do this forever. But going to Seattle Pacific, these guys who I met like maybe the first day, they were like fluent in Luganda, which is like the language. So I wouldn't have been able to like carry it that far.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, it was God telling me, like, maybe hang up your hat, your pranking hat.
Did you tell them about the prank eventually?
I told them, but it was hard for people to like understand it until like, I think they, I wasn't able to tell the full story. I would tell the story sometimes and people would be like, oh, I can't believe you did that. But there was a bit of a disbelief. And I think people
like they couldn't believe the scope of it.
Yeah. Until really like this American Life story came out and it was told in such a, like a full way where they're like, wait, what? I can't believe you did that. And everyone at Westmont confirmed that, like, yeah, like that shit happened. So anyway, finished at Seattle Pacific, got involved in like gospel choir, studied abroad, like learned. I think it was there where I learned that there's a reason why I don't fit into like the Christian evangelical culture, is because it is a culture. I see it as more cultural than religious in a way. Like there's a religious aspect, but the reason why I never kind of fit into that culture is because I didn't grow up in it. And there is like a racial element in this country with Christianity. Like Sunday has, you know, Martin Luther King said, like, it's the most segregated hour. And I think that's what Martin Luther King said. I don't know. You can Google me, but I'm pretty sure
it's not what Martin Luther said.
Yeah. So that's what I learned. And so I think like after college, obviously like I got involved in theater and ended up doing comedy and that was very much inspired by that experience that I had in doing the prank. But ultimately I think now, after that experience of like being immersed in that culture as an outsider, I don't necessarily go to church. I've tried to go to these hipster churches out here, like
in
Mosaic and
Oasis. Names. Oh, you did name names. Mosaic.
Yeah. And what I found was that those communities are, I think, important for the people that go there. And but ultimately, I think it's a place where people grew up in a certain culture can like find commonality in a city that's kind of, you know, lonely and insane. And again, I tried it and I was like, oh, okay, these are people that sort of grew up in Christianity that are here in LA. And dress cool now.
And are like a little bit more progressive.
Yeah. You're like, well, but I know
not that much. Yeah.
Not that much. So
I ask, and you can be totally candid, like you won't offend us or anything.
Sure.
Can I ask, like, from your perspective as an outsider that came into like kind of a white evangelical space and everything, like, what is your impression of what our culture is? Or like what it's based on or what it sounds like to you?
It's there's a deep history. in it, especially like American evangelical Christianity. Yeah. My impression that it's a cultural thing that I think is people, I think that go to evangelical churches in America believe in, you know, a religion of salvation and, you know, kind of believing in Jesus to be kind of accepted and going to heaven and everything. But ultimately it's not very accepting. And there's racism in it. And I got to know a lot of like people that grew up in that culture. I was in a long-term relationship with a girl who grew up in that culture. And it was very clear to me that like, just in meeting like her family, I would never like be a part of them. Mm. And it didn't matter. It had nothing to do with faith. Yeah. And I think what solidified that was like, it was a conversation that I had, I think, with her mom, where it was like, well, you know, if you don't believe that accepting Jesus is like the only way to get into heaven, like, then you're not a Christian. Like, and I'm concerned that you're not a Christian. And I was like, wait, but so you're telling me that because generations of my ancestors, my family members, just because they didn't hear the gospel or weren't Christians, that they're all in hell. And your ancestors are all there just because they got to hear or grew up in this religion? Because I don't think that. I think that there were wonderful, great, I would say loving people that God loved and would accept in my family before the white people got there. And I'm sorry, but I reject that. And it was this conversation where it like drew this wedge, and it was like, well, that's what you believe. And I was like, whoa, like you think it blew my mind. And that's when I realized, I was like, oh, this is a culture, and yeah, it is a culture. And I can't expect to ultimately be like fully accepted in this culture because I am not that.
Right. Because I can't forget the family and the people that I came from that had such a different context.
Sure.
That you maybe like somehow make allowances for, but not really.
And yeah, yeah.
And the assumption that like, well, everyone's heard the gospel, so you had a choice and you didn't make the right choice. And it's like, no.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, yeah. And, you know, taking it a step further, it's hard for me to believe that, you know, someone, is troubled and problematic is any of these Christians in history, like a Martin Luther, or, mm-hmm, you know, or any of the popes or anyone, you know, is any different than a problematic figure like Gandhi, who, you know, was kind of misogynistic and racist, but also had this like incredible impact in history. Like, it's simplifying a thing that I don't think we have any place making a call for. So that's my impression. I see American evangelical Christianity as a culture, even with like Black Christianity. And that's something that like I didn't grow up with because my, mm-hmm, family's from Africa. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the way that I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had a lot of like, did you ever go to a Black Christian church necessarily? And like, what was your impression of that, like versus other things?
Yeah, I did. I tried going to a few of those churches, which are super fun. I mean, I love the music. Mm-hmm. I was in a gospel choir for a hot minute in college, and I dig it. But I also think that it's not the culture that I grew up in. There's also, you know, things I don't believe in is, you know, there's, if you watched Aretha Franklin's, you know, funeral, I think it illuminated a lot of things about like sexism and yeah, there's a certain type of conservatism in that culture that I don't agree with. Yeah. And so, and again, that's cultural.
Yeah. That's a cultural thing. Weirdly, like Christianity is a very patriarchal cultural thing, yeah, in a lot of ways. And then there's also just the race aspect. It's all crossed into that too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Very, very, very conservative. And again, like I know that there are churches across the spectrum, but like where I'm going to feel the most connected and familiar is probably in an Episcopal church.
Yeah. Well, honestly, safe.
Yeah.
Probably is a big part of that.
Full circle. Yeah. You know, I went to a couple services at All Saints, and I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. If I'm going to go to a church service, although my gripe with them is I went to a Martin Luther King service there at All Saints, which is like super liberal. Mm-hmm. And they sang, it was like this all, it was MLK service. Mm-hmm. The choir, there was not a person of color in the choir. And they sang This Little Light of Mine.
Really?
And they were clapping on the one in the three.
The one in three?
And I was like, bless them.
I'm gonna let it shine.
And it was maybe the most offensive thing that I've heard. But it was
the
like,
one in the three is an attack in that
yeah.
context.
I felt very attacked
musically. But
I was like, yeah, I was like, bless you. So that's where, you know, that's where I'm at. Like, as far as the faith thing, I believe in a higher power. Obviously, like. Yeah, I love to talk to people that grew up in that Christian culture just because I'm like, yeah, like I had an experience with that.
Yeah. We've crossed paths.
Yeah, we've crossed paths.
It sounds like a friendly relationship with an ex now.
Yes, it is. It is. And there were moments where I didn't talk to that ex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, like, where you hated angry, that ex. Yeah.
Well, I was just like, I felt hurt and maybe just like definitely hurt and wronged by that ex. But now looking back on it, I see where I've grown and I've learned from that relationship.
Yeah.
It's cool. And I didn't name any names. I didn't name any specific names.
No, but we can go back and put them in if you want.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm firing shots at people that like Mario Brothers. I'm firing shots at APU.
Luigi.
Riverside as a county.
Yeah, Riverside as an entire county.
It's a bad place.
Yeah.
Listen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, and something I think that's humbling for me to think about, and probably a lot of people listening, is thinking about the racial dimension and element by which to process doctrine. Because most of the time, and this happens in like media and entertainment too, mm-hmm. where it's like default is white male POV
a lot of
times.
Yeah, like that's considered just like, this is neutral.
Normal. Yeah, it's neutral and normal. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But yeah, the doctrine of hell as processed through generations of ancestors who like, well, that wasn't the case. And we do have to say something harsh. You don't have to say that much harsh if it's like, well, yeah, my families lived in Oklahoma since the 1800s. Well, you don't have to have a harsh way of thinking if that's the case. That was the case with my family. But mm-hmm. if God is a global God of the whole earth, really think about it and really humble yourselves to consider if that still makes sense to you when considering people of other cultures.
Yeah, because there was somebody good, you know, in my family history. That maybe would have been accepted into heaven at some point before the white people got there. I think, I don't know. Call me crazy.
I don't know if heaven is even the question, but just like that someone that got close to like what Christianity is about, you know, and it's like, is God like, well, you didn't say Jesus, so
yeah, or new, yeah, or like new God, or what had some sort of connection,
yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I don't want to be like
put in a binary of heaven and
hell. Yeah, exactly, because I don't want to reduce it to that.
Oh, but, yeah, but I understand it's hard to like undo once you think about it that way,
for sure.
And I think like I had heard growing up too that for people that were, you know, came before Jesus or after and just were totally dissociated from like European or Asian Christianity or whatever, their logic a lot of the time was like, well, God reveals himself to them in their own way.
Yeah.
And like, so they're still like, they have a choice and he could reveal himself in nature or through dreams or whatever. Sure. And so like, don't worry about it so much, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, well, then why is it so important that I get it right? You know?
Right.
Well, couldn't I discover God in a waterfall too? You know? And that kind of thing.
I know the kind of, doctrinal theological gymnastics we have to do to like, well, those people didn't hear it, but they knew him because they saw creation, because according to blah 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 and this thing in the Old Testament, like, you don't have to do that.
And people argue over that, and that's the thing, like in denominations are created because one people fall on either side of that, and so it's insane. But the other thing that I found like in my adulthood that I've taken note of is reading the Bible and kind of like being familiar with the Gospels and just like who Jesus was portrayed as, the most Christ-like people that I've met and encountered in my adulthood were people that wanted nothing to do with church, and the people that if it went down, if the shit hit the fan, I'm not going to call those people that go to church. Like, I'm going to call these people that I know are just incredible people. And that says something. That says something that how could you sort of expect that that person isn't reflecting Christ-like qualities?
Yeah.
Or, you know, just, I don't know, wouldn't be like a disciple of Christ back in the day. I don't know.
That like counts for nothing if they don't have, if they haven't said the salvation prayer.
Yeah. It just doesn't, it doesn't make sense. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Heaven is for real. Hell? Maybe not.
Heaven and hell exist on earth.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Both at the same time.
No afterlife? We gone? Now I'm becoming Pete Holmes.
Yeah. Gosh. Okay. So I was quoting my dad, but my dad always says that heaven and hell can exist both like on earth, depending on like what your focus is and like where you are. And I do think that there's something, you know, like allegorical about that. I don't know. I don't know if I have like a hard, you know, kind of, I guess, theory on an afterlife. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, we'll take a break. And we'll figure it out during the break, and then we'll let you know.
Come back with an answer.
What we figure out.
Or maybe I will have entered.
Whoa! It's not that long of a break.
Kill Zora and then bring him back and let him.
His ghost is
gonna
haunt our ass, and then he'll tell us
exactly. Thanks guys. The afterlife is Montecito.
Oh wow!
I hope so. Yeah. Oh, man. Tea time with Ovra. Sure.
Thanks for sharing all that and all your story and perspective.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story. It's very great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me break the format.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of... taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now. Mm. And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with the new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that can kind of propel me into
to feel as incredible as you could feel.
To exercise more, mm-hmm. to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that. And then
good
going,
brain.
Going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry. There's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/goodchristianfun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
I agree.
The
first month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. So, no.
What? Oh, I was shaking my ponytail out of my back.
Caroline often shakes her head no at me throughout
sort of a
the
reflex,
show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more like that joke sucked or no, that's not a good
like
point.
This comes up.
So we figured out the afterlife stuff, but we're not quite ready to share it yet, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. God told all of us at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It was cool. And then we were like, we shouldn't tell anybody ever.
God DM'd me and said, not yet, not yet.
Wait, on Twitter or mm-hmm. Instagram?
It was Twitter, although Instagram, it's easier to slide in now because you can just be like, hey, I'm sure. Just commenting on your story. But
sure.
God used the bunny filter on mine.
Yeah.
God snapped me.
Out there thirst trapping.
God and I had like a 15-day streak.
Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God is bae. Okay, but let's bring it down. Oh. What denomination do you associate these pads with the most?
Oh, this is like a church that's in a coffee shop.
Oh, a coffee shop chair.
Yeah, like they have like a auxiliary room.
So nice. So you can hear a faint espresso machine sound in the background.
Yeah. I hear like the like flip-flops on the ground of like someone that came a little bit later maybe to like to get like a coffee.
I have a latte with no coffee, extra milk for Kevin.
Sure, sure.
Latte with, did you say no milk?
No coffee, extra milk.
I'm not a milk boy. I'm a soy boy.
A
wait
hot
a minute.
Milk for Kevin Porter?
I'm a soy boy.
Soy boy for life. That doesn't mean anything different now, does it?
No.
Zora, on the show, we don't plug ourselves and promote our projects. We lift them up as you would in a Christian coffee shop.
Love it.
During the worship set.
Okay.
So we start with Caroline.
You can lift me up at Caroline's Farts on Twitter and Instagram. And this week I'd like to lift up Can You Ever Forgive Me? The movie with Melissa McCarthy. Is the music getting louder while I'm talking?
I'm sorry. No, it's not. I had my hands off of it. I'll turn it down.
It's swelling. It's like, getting more dramatic.
Yeah. I just saw it the other day and it was really good. It's based on a true story of this writer who then started forging letters from like Dorothy Parker and Fanny Bryce.
And she has superpowers?
And she's not a superhero. I watched a movie without a superhero. I often do. It was really good. Melissa McCarthy was great. I would recommend it.
Yeah.
So we turn to you.
I would like to lift up my podcast, Dopetown 3000, which is available on Apple Podcasts through Campfire Media. I would also like to lift up my Twitter and Instagram handles, which are my name. Zora Bikangaga at Zora Bikangaga. I'm the one and only Zora Bikangaga.
Yeah, there's only one. There was no WGA conflicts with an existing guy.
Nope.
It was fine.
Yeah.
And we'll link it to your This American Life story in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. Link that story. And, you know, I'm just out here doing the thing. And, yeah, and watch Raven's Home on the Disney Channel where the new episode's coming out We're working on season 3.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
What part do you play on that show?
I'm a writer.
Oh, you're a writer.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I just assumed you were an actor.
Cool. Well, I'm an actor too, but we'll see. I'm sure I'll voice myself somewhere into that show.
You should.
To play like a mailman or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Now, I'm not asking for like spoilers per se, but we knew she was so Raven in the first series. Is she still Raven in this new one?
Oh, yeah.
She's still Raven?
Still Raven Baxter.
So Raven. Okay.
And she lives with her friend Chelsea from the original show.
Oh,
and they're co-parenting together.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's great.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Very sweet. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter. I'll lift up a new little power group called Boy Genius. They put on EP that I really love this week. And you can lift us up, as per usual, at Christian Fun Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. You can check out our good Christian Fun Spotify playlist to hear all the songs that you hear on the show. And every review you leave us on iTunes/Apple Podcasts, we donate $1 to charity. And this month's charity is
Trans Lifeline, translifeline.org. It's a hotline for people in the trans community if they're feeling threatened or unsafe or anything. It's a safe place for them to call. And I think it's only manned by fellow trans people, so you're talking directly to each other. They need a lot of help. There's a lot of difficulty going on for the trans community right now, and so we're just happy to lift them up. Please do the same.
Hell yeah. Zora, thanks so much for joining us on the show, man.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you coming by.
Thank you so much.
Showing us how our format is bad and this format might be better. No, our format's good.
Our culture is bad.
I mean, our culture is very bad.
It's not.
That's fair.
It's not all bad.
Oh, thank you. That's generous.
Very charitable.
I had some good memories.
Yeah. And there's nothing left to say except in all of Pont's people said,
Amen.
You know what? Let's go out with the aforementioned This Little Light of Mine.
Ooh.
But instead of an all-white choir, we'll do it with...
An all-dog choir?
An all-dog choir.
Oh, love it.
Wait for the woofs and barks, guys. Now, this is one of my favorite covers of This Little Light of Mine. It's coming. Wait for it. It's about to start.
Now, this little light of mine.
This is Mavis Staples from We'll Never Turn Back from 2007. This little light. I love her. Alright, we'll see you next week. Bye.
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 All in my home, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my room, I'm gonna let it shine. Shine out the road is dark.
Hi, y'all, it's me, McGrant. Next week on GC, I'm just getting to the point. I really gotta go take a shit. Hey, Amy's human just like you, okay? Amy's got all the same holes you got. And Amy has all the same needs you got. Next week on GCF, Kevin and Caroline are talking about the Jars of Clay album, Much Afraid. Which, if you ask me, maybe they should have done for Halloween because it sounds real spooky. People are getting scared, getting afraid. But whatever, I'm not running this dumb show. They can do whatever the hell they want. I don't care. Ingram don't give a shit. All right. Gotta go dump. Amy, motherfucking Grant, over and out.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.